Welcome back to another episode of The Textual Talk. Today, we're diving into an inspiring tech journey with our special guest, Devaney, a trailblazing security engineer who transitioned from teaching and customer service to making her mark in the world of cybersecurity. Our host, HD, explores Devaney's reflections on patience in her career, layoffs, her candidate experience with healthcare, and the challenging of balancing life and work in a demanding field. We'll also touch on the evolving landscape of tech careers, uncovering the nuances of remote work, pay discrepancies, and booming potential of driverless cars like Waymo. Devaney shares her struggles and triumphs from self-learning technical skills to leveraging LinkedIn for career growth, securing certifications, and navigating the biases within the hiring processes. Join us as we highlight key insights on the importance of passion, diversity, education, mentorship, and the crucial role that organizations play in shaping aspiring cybersecurity professionals. From personal anecdotes about family support to strategic advice on career transitions, this episode is packed with valuable lessons and real-world experiences that will resonate with anyone passionate about tech and personal growth. Don't miss out on this engaging discussion. This video is being brought to you by Level Up in Tech. It's Q3 in 2024, but you still have time to get into the cloud. With the quick search for cloud in Indeed, you can see over 44,000 jobs are listed that is related or pertaining to the cloud. Now, that is a lot. But if you're watching this right now, you might be thinking, well, how do I learn the skills to get into the cloud? Well, we got you covered. Level Up in Tech is one of the best, if not the best, program related to getting people into the cloud. At Level Up in Tech, you can learn about server config and troubleshooting, the AWS cloud, infrastructure as code, CI/CD, scripting, containerization, and more. And also, they now also have a new multi-cloud AI engineering program that is dedicated to help you have the latest and greatest skills to help you be marketable in this tech market. They post more testimonials than almost any program that I could think of. Check them out. Now, if you're ready to start your cloud career today, then use the link in my description to go to leveluptech.com/tech so you can start your career. And plus, they'll know that I sent you. But on to the video. Welcome back to the Sexual Talk Podcast. I'm your host, HD, and we got a lovely guest for y'all today. Her name is Devaney, and she traveled all the way down to Dallas to be with us today. But if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, you know what to do. Follow us. Leave us a comment. Helps us out with the podcast metrics. And if you're watching us on YouTube, you know what to do. Subscribe, like, comment, do whatever. Hit that bell icon and hit all to be notified when we're dropping all content. And I'm laughing, guys, because before we started, I was trying to make sure I did not butcher her name. And right when I said the intro, I actually messed her name up. But it's all good. We're going to get to it. We're going to get it. But, Devaney, how you doing today?
I'm great. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. How was your coffee?
It was actually really good. There was a really cute little coffee shop across the street.
Yeah. I ain't gonna lie. Sometimes a cheat code, if people don't want to take pre-workout, just get you an iced coffee and then go to the gym.
Mm-hmm. Maybe not an iced coffee. Iced coffee, for some reason, it doesn't do it for me. I don't know if it's my mind. I feel like to get energy, my coffee has to be hot.
Really?
Yeah.
I got an espresso at home, but I really am.
Oh, you bougie.
Well, I guess. I mean, only because I want the, like, I got still a regular coffee maker, but I don't use anymore. But I've tried my hand to make my own iced coffee at home, and it's all right. It's not what it tastes like at the place, but I'm getting better at it.
I'm talking about you. I literally use a French press. Like, I manually make my coffee.
Exactly. Now, you're the one that's bougie. I don't even know what a French press is.
It's really nice. It changed the game on the coffee. It's, the taste of it is very similar to, like, the Nespresso.
I feel like most people that – I think you're remote, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think most people that at home either have a coffee maker or, like, a – bougie coffee maker. Mm-hmm. They have something they can make their tea with. Like we also have the water dispenser where we get the 5 gallon thing delivered to us.
Oh, okay. So yeah. That's next on my list.
Yeah. So you got the room temp water and then the cold and hot. It's an easy way to make your tea in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that actually should be like a show. Like, hey, what are your things that you need to work from home? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's very much so a thing, certain type of ways. Like, for example, I know I used to have my desk facing the window because I would get the good light and all that. But I didn't feel that productive that way. Mm. And I did some reading. I seen something on some feng shui stuff. And it's like, hey, don't have your desk hidden the window. Have your desk cornered or whatever facing the door.
Mm.
And since I did that,
way more productive when I go to the office. Yeah.
Now you're going to have me go home and change my days.
I bet you'd be like, you know what? I am more productive.
Yeah. Because I don't care for the light coming in, but it was like the only spot to put it in my room.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you can always add lights to your desk. That way you mm-hmm. can get your light that you need. I don't know. And it's something about having your back to the door that's kind of like,
yeah,
I need to see who's coming in mm-hmm. at any given time, especially like how my stuff is set up is perfect. So if I am on a meeting or a call, at least you have to walk around to my desk mm-hmm. to actually get in the frame. If my desk is facing the window, you mm-hmm. walk in the door, somebody going to see you.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense because sometimes I'll be home, I'll be working. My mom, I'll be like, hey, I'm on a call right now. You can't come in. My daughter, nobody cares. Nobody cares what I'm doing. They just walk in. And my mom will come in and hand me my mail. I'm like, I'm talking to a vendor right now.
Yeah.
I have things to do.
Yeah, I have. Well, granted, it used to work, but my oldest daughter's figured out how to open. We had these little doorknob things. Mm-hmm. And they go over the doorknob and they like just turn on the doorknob. So it's supposed to be for people who understand the two openings, you squeeze a little bit and open. She's figured out how to do that. So she knows how to open most of the doors. Now the 3-year old, she doesn't know how to do that yet. So it still works when I close up the door. But it's like the struggle of parenting is trying to outsmart the toddlers mm-hmm. and until they actually start outsmarting you.
Yeah. My toddler can unscrew anything, like all of my face products, literally mm-hmm. anything in the bathroom, she can open it all up. But she cannot open the doors yet. So I'm still winning there.
Keywords yet.
Right.
When she starts, you can say, hey, what's them things she was talking about? but no. In all seriousness, Devaney, can you introduce yourself to our guests?
Hi, my name is Devaney. I'm a junior security engineer. I've been in my role for about a year now, and I just graduated with my master's degree.
Okay, now we know that's not the full story.
No.
So we want to unpack.
It's a long story.
That's what we do on this podcast. We have real conversations, and so it's somebody out there that's a Devaney, and we want to connect with them. So I know you gave us the Cliff Notes version, but what made you want to get into cybersecurity?
Money. So originally I had a friend who had been working in tech for a while, and specifically in information security. And I had some life events go mm-hmm. on. I was married previously and didn't work out. So I moved home, fresh new start, had a daughter. She was 3 months old at the time. So it was honestly out of necessity that I was like, I have to find something. I have to find a career and not just a job so that I can sustain us. So I just took inspiration from my friend. She seemed to really like what she did. She was making great money and she had been in it for a while. So I'm like, okay, the longevity is there. So I decided to explore it. And just due to the circumstances, I just went all in. So a lot of people ask, like, what did you do to get into cybersecurity? Literally everything that I could. Like, I did all of the things. I jumped into my master's program very shortly after I found out I was laid off from my job while I was still on maternity leave. So it was a lot, but also it gave me the freedom to be able to take on more classes, more trainings, and I just, like, fully immersed myself in the learning. Luckily, even though it was, like, inspired by the stability of the career, I feel like I really found where I was supposed to be. So now it's not just for the money. The money is great, but it's not just about the money anymore.
Great. So you said a lot, and I want to definitely get into, I guess, what were you doing before you decided to get into cybersecurity?
So many things.
Well, specifically the job that laid you off.
I was working for a company, I won't say their name, but they sell bikes. So I was actually living in Dallas at the time, and I was working out of the Plano office. I was remote, but my home base was the Plano office. Our entire office got let go. So I really did research to make sure they could lay me off while I was on maternity leave.
They do it all the time. It's pretty common.
They could. I was literally, when I got the call that I was being laid off, the woman who called me to let me know, she didn't know that I was still on maternity leave. I was supposed to go back to work that next week. I thought they were calling to, like, make sure I had all of my things. And No, she was like, well, unfortunately, I'm like, wait, what do you mean? As my like 3-month-old is crying in the background, like, unfortunately, what? So, yeah, it was rough, but I was just doing customer service in that role. Okay. It was something that I had gotten into just to, because I needed insurance to have my child.
Right. And I want to say Texas is an at-will state too. So mm-hmm. it's like one of those things. So the good thing is at least you got laid off early in your career to understand you now understand about being loyal to yourself mm-hmm. versus really getting engulfed in a company and being in love with the company so much. We always make these comparisons, but having a job, because you spend so much time like at work, whether you're remote or going to office, it's like a relationship. It's similar to like if you were either married or you're in a relationship with somebody. Unfortunately, heartbreak or getting divorced or whatever, it kind of makes you like, okay, loving this job ain't the only thing that's going to keep me at this job, ain't the only thing that's going to sustain my career. It's not the only thing that's going to sustain my relationship. It's other stuff that's engulfed in that this relationship is about. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, sometimes the hard way is like it's on them, but a lot of times it's not on them. It's just it happened for a reason, and then it helps you out to be a better person. I know my layoff, really, my head is always on a swivel. Mm-hmm. Once it happens, you know, especially most of the time it happens because it's not shocking for people to be laid off multiple times in their career. Luckily, I've only been laid off once. Mm-hmm. But most of the time it's always a job you really like, or either it got something that you need. Like mine was my first security job that laid me off.
Okay.
And so I was like, dang, how could they or whatever? Like I'm like, because you're thinking, you really are thinking like, hey, I'm doing the best work out of everybody. Why me?
Well, that's the thing too. So I guess that experience, it taught me to, like you said, keep your head on a swivel. But also it taught me to make sure that I specialize in something that is, nothing is irreplaceable, but something that is hard to replace. So now where I'm focused at work is making sure I'm growing in the skill set that a lot of people don't have.
Yeah.
So
we'll definitely delve into that. So you decide. So what was your, I know you got your master's. So what was your bachelor's in?
Biology.
Okay.
I was pre-med when I was an undergrad.
Wait, did you like grow up watching Grey's Anatomy and stuff?
No. No, I actually never wanted to be a doctor before actually being in college. My dad had gotten really sick. Okay. So I spent a lot of time in hospitals and just watching like the care or treatment, lack of care with him. And I was just like, okay, like I see what y'all doing. I could do it better kind of thing. But after that whole experience, I realized that wasn't my passion. I had that passion for my father, not to do it as my career. Yeah. So I graduated and I was so deep in when I came to that realization that I just went ahead and finished the degree, but I didn't go to medical school.
Yeah, no, I got you. I mean, at least you realized that. I don't be beating down on nurses or anybody in the medical field, but a lot of them are in it for the check mm-hmm. and not because they want to help people.
Exactly.
And jobs like that, you need to be in there because you want to help people.
Yeah. And after seeing that firsthand, I'm like, I could never do that. So another one of my very many jobs that I had mm-hmm. before I got here, I was also a teacher. And that was another thing. So like, if you have a biology degree, you can't do anything with it but go back to school or teach. So I taught fourth grade. It was not for me. And it was kind of the same sentiment. I'm like, okay, well, I can't, you know, I wouldn't want to do anybody's child a disservice by teaching them or being in this position of leadership to children. And I know my heart's not in it. And my heart was not with the fourth grade. I loved them. They were my babies, but it was not to teach.
I think we see a lot of teachers who heart not in it, but it's a check.
Right.
It's a check they know going to come on whatever. They get paid, what, monthly or semi-monthly?
I think when I was there, it was monthly.
So they get paid on the 1st or the 30th, whatever they get paid on. Mm-hmm. They off in the summer. They know they're going to get paid.
Mm-hmm.
And all of them is treating it like a job. None more, none less. Mm-hmm. Which I can't blame them for because they don't get paid enough to kind of put up with what they got to put up with. So that's a whole nother mm-hmm. thing when it comes to being a teacher. And my patience is short. So I don't think I'll be able to be a teacher.
Yeah, it was definitely a huge learning curve with the patients for me, for sure. And I didn't have it. I wasn't built for it. I commend people out there that can do it. it was not for me. But yeah, the ones who are good and their hearts are in it, and you know, that's the role mm-hmm. that they should be in. I definitely believe they should be paid more.
Right. Yeah. And then I recognize firsthand too with like the lack of care people get like in hospitals and stuff like that. I know when my grandpa, when he got really sick, I stayed overnight. Well, I got to stay overnight with him at the whatever facility it was. And the nurse only came in there one time throughout the whole night. And I told my mom and I said, hey, the nurse only came here once. I'm not like a qualified person to look after him. It was like I think he pulled his thing out his nose to breathe mm-hmm. and whatever medicine had my papa on. He was gone at the time. He was trying to go home because he didn't really know where he was. This is a lot going on. I was like, just think if people aren't here, people don't have their family members to come here. We know y'all not coming here seeing about these people, mm-hmm. which is just one of them things. That's like, I know, I think I told them, my parents, I was like, I'm better off, look, whenever y'all get sick, just having a house big enough to where y'all just come stay with me. Yeah. We get somebody to come sit in our house with you versus wasting money and putting you in like a, what's that, like a nursing home before mm-hmm. he like died? Whatever, I think like a nursing home. And I was like, yeah, I probably wouldn't waste money on that. Like,
and they're really expensive. Like, really, really, really expensive.
Yeah.
So, and to the care or lack of care that they receive there is crazy. A lot of people will start like those homes, like the assisted living homes, group homes, things like that. And again, goes back to like just doing it for the check. And that's never been me. And that's why when I started this, I thought that I was getting into a career that I could do just for a check. Like, that's kind of what I went into this with. Like, I had my daughter, and I'm like, okay, I need to be able to just go to work. I need to be able to learn a skill, be able to do my job, go do my job, and go home and have a life. And then I jumped into cybersecurity, and now, like, this is my whole life. This is all I do.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the thing. So there's this thing. I don't know if you're on Twitter or not.
Off and on.
So a lot of times years ago on Twitter and everything, there were these talks about you need to be passionate about your job. And people saying, well, you don't need to be passionate and this and that. I was like, it's like a middle point. I would hope somebody is passionate about what they want to do because it's going to help them stay good at it. Because, granted, I think you're at a newer company. But if you ever leave that company and go to a company that's been established for 50, 60, 70, almost 100 years, you're going to see some of the people that's been there for a long time, that passion been long gone, and they just getting their check. Mm-hmm. And I think everybody eventually gets there when they realize, like, it is what it is, that this company's not going to change. I don't feel like interviewing no more. I got a good enough salary. My kids are grown out the house. My house paid off. I got retirement. Look, I'm doing this until, mm-hmm. like, I think these are very much so human things they care about. But I think when you're starting off, you can't afford that luxury because a lot of times, well, at least I don't see anywhere where people may be at a company for a super long time anymore unless it's a government type of job. Mm-hmm. I just don't see it possible anymore. I think those days are gone of us sitting around for a very long time. Mm-hmm. But we tell people, when you get in this industry, you better make sure that you're staying current and you're learning everything. Because one of the main questions they ask the newbies is, hey, how do you keep up with the threats? Mm. How do you stay current? So I just said all that to say, like, you're definitely right. That's how it gets you. Like, you think, oh, because everybody saw, oh, I'm working remote. I'm making $150,000. I'm going to get my nails done. I'm going to get pedicures and massages. So that's what everybody saw because that was the good grift during the pandemic. Because
that's what you show on the TikTok. That's what, you know, that's what gets views. That's what gets clicks. Like, that. This is the tech lifestyle. It look good, but you don't see me in my room studying at 1:30 in the morning because I just put my baby to bed. Y'all don't see that part.
Yeah. And to be honest, most of the people that's doing the lifestyle content were people that was not in, like, technical, like, security roles. It was a lot of people that was either doing recruiting or tech sales or something else. It was just cool to say, yeah, you know, I took my meeting, now I'm by the beach or whatever. It's like, you ain't see nobody say, hey, this is what happened when you got woke up out of your sleep at 3:30 in the morning because you're on call and it's an incident on a Saturday. So the time you got it off and your little girl's 3 months, what year was this, 2020, 2021?
2022.
Okay, 2022.
August of 2022 is pretty much when I say my start was.
Okay. So, what made you choose, I guess, the education route? It was just because, and I'm gonna be candid right here or whatever, so I don't take any offense to it. Was it because, okay, hey, I can go back to school, get a master's, this is a good enough school, and because I'm getting a master's, I can get some extra money while I'm in school just because of, like you said, the situation, you move back home, and you're trying to survive. Like, was that, like, what you thought about?
Yeah. And that's all I knew. I did not, like, I don't come from a family that has, like, everybody is educated, you know, mm-hmm. like, now, you know, like, the younger generation of my family, everybody is going to school and getting their degrees and things like that. But I have older siblings, and I got my bachelor's first. Like, so I didn't really have the groundwork set for me to be able to see, mm-hmm. like, okay, if you want to do something different, take these steps, you know, to avoid jumping into a master's program and not knowing what you're doing. Would I advise anybody to, if you're starting out on this journey, call up your nearest college and just jump in? No, absolutely not. That was crazy. It worked out, but that was a really dumb decision. I was really playing roulette with my money.
You can say that, but at the same time, and this is why I like the pushback on universities, they should have prereqs for people to do certain majors.
Yeah, and so with mine, I had no idea at the time. My degree is basically a business degree. My master's is in security management. It's not a technical degree at all. So my focus is on cybersecurity, so I had some loosely technical classes, like a networking class, things like that. Mm-hmm. But it was really to be able to manage security professionals. It wasn't for me to be able to practice security myself. So I had to do a lot of learning on the back end. Mm-hmm. And that started with learning what I was even doing at school, because I didn't know what I signed up for. And that's why I say, like, it was a really dumb decision to just jump into it, because I didn't even know what I was doing. I was just taking a chance.
Yeah, no, I definitely get that. It's kind of like when people ask me, oh, what should I do or school? I was like, man, do what works for you. But I was like, I do say exceptions don't make the rule. And granted, I seen you on my post that I made about the help desk stuff. We'll talk about that mm-hmm. too. And this is one of the things that you can run into. And fortunately enough for her, it worked. But a lot of times people will go out to school and then they'll have the degree, but then they don't know anything. But I will tell you, the fact of knowing how to pretty much, if the most of the people who get paid a lot are less and less technical and more business savvy, they mm-hmm. know the ins and outs, they understand metrics, and they know how to talk to other people on a regular level. And that's why they get paid the big bucks. So knowing how to do that is a skill set within itself. Because my master's is in technology management. I didn't pick cyber because I was already in cyber. I was like, I'm going to keep this a little general in case, like, hey, someone say, you want to be an IT director? You want to do this or that? I was like, it's pretty much a lot of overlap there mm-hmm. anyway. So that's why I got mine in technology management, for that very reason. Because initially I wanted to go to school into management because, like, I want to help more of us get jobs. Mm-hmm. And then that's when you kind of get into corporate long enough to realize, even if I get in management, that's probably not going to happen.
Right. Because there are still checks and balances. People still have to sign off on whoever you're bringing on to your mm-hmm. team. They have to fit the culture, you know, yep. whatever that means.
So. Yeah. So that's when I said, it went until years later until I started the channel. It's like, this is going to be my way that I help more people mm-hmm. get in than I probably would ever do at any job. Mm-hmm. So it's 2022. You got a newborn. You're going through school. Man, that's rough. I couldn't imagine. I got a newborn. He will be 2 months, next Sunday? Yeah, he'll be 2 months. I couldn't imagine going back to school with him and then my toddlers and stuff. Like, I couldn't imagine. It's hard enough as it is now sometimes to get studying in mm-hmm. between doing stuff for them.
I was really blessed. Like, I had the support from my mom. Like, my mom is older, so she's 72. I hope she's not watching this.
she definitely gonna watch it.
She's retired. So, like, with my siblings, there's like a 17-year age gap between myself and my siblings. So
you're the baby.
Yeah, I'm the baby.
Oh, you're like my sister.
I grew up with my nieces and nephews, not my siblings. So, yeah, it's a really big age gap. So, like, all of my nieces and nephews, which were my mom's first set of grandkids, she didn't really get a lot of time with them. Mm-hmm. So, like, when my daughter came, now she's retired. Now we live in her house. So she's, like, eating it up. Like, she's so happy. Like, she so loves that my daughter is there. Yeah. So I had so much support. And I know, I don't know, sometimes when I talk about my journey, like, even though it was hard, like, the obviously, like, how I ended up in that situation, it sounds really bad when you read it on paper, like, oh, you got divorced, you had a baby, like, all the things, right? Got laid off. But I had so much support from my mom, like, just being able to say, hey, whatever you need to do, I have the baby, like, do your thing. So I was able to be up at one in the morning studying. I was able to go to Afrotech, my first conference, and be in Austin for the week. And know that my child was taken
care of. That's in 2022?
That was in 2022.
Did we run it? I'm trying to see, did you run into me there?
I don't think so.
I was there.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. I was there. I don't know if you know who the child father is. Jermaine Jupiter.
Yes, yes, yes.
He was there. A lot of us were
there. I didn't know anybody in the industry at that point, so I didn't know who to look
for.
That's
our first time meeting. Like, I had people.
I saw Simone Bees there, but I didn't know who she was at that point.
Yeah, that's the first time I met Bees. Like, because a lot of us had met each other through the pandemic, through mm-hmm. Twitter, and then it was our first time coming in contact with everybody in person. And I had, like, people, like, they'll look for me afar, they'll look, do you have a YouTube channel? And then I was like, yeah, that's me. And then they'll come up and speak and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm surprised. But it was a lot of people, but I ran into, like, most of the people that I knew. Mm-hmm. But that's cool. I'm glad that worked out for you. And I thought about a real question right here, right? And like I said, I have all different type of guests on there and probably watchers, even though men watch more of my content, women still watch too. They come in all the time, especially when I bring women on. And I want to ask this, it could be a little bit personal, so you actually can say, you know, I don't want to answer that. But were you dealing with, like, any type of postpartum stuff going on while, like, you still was on maternity leave, then you get laid off, and now you're like, okay, what is going on? I got a crying baby here. I have no job. Like, was you, like, going through all that stuff, too, in the midst of trying to do stuff?
No.
Okay.
Thank God. I literally, like, when I tell you my mama was my backbone during that whole time, like, it was almost like, I feel like a lot of mothers feel like they wish they could, like, clone themselves. I cloned myself. Like, I had another mom. Like, it mm-hmm. wasn't, like, obviously, you know, the ideal would be to have, like, a family structure. Right. But it was like the next best thing, man. Like, literally, when my baby was crying, my mom knew what to do because she was already a mom, right? Yeah. So, like, a lot of...
Just like riding a bike.
Right. So, I feel like a lot of women... I didn't personally have postpartum depression, so I'm not sure what the actual triggers are. I know that for me, if I did not have that support, I would have spiraled. I would have been in a really bad, in a really, really dark place. And because I had that support, I didn't have to go there. Like, I was able to do whatever I needed to do to heal at that time and, you know, start the new professional endeavors and school and all the things. So everything was, even though it was like a bad situation, everything could go right. Everything that could go right went right. So, okay.
Yeah. It's funny because, like, talking to you, it sounded like a mix of my baby sister and my mom. My mom had me because I'm my oldest. She still was staying with my grandparents at the time. And my grandmother at the time was, of course, she had her six kids and then she was a nurse. But she was like, Granny had you spoiled. I'd be asleep, you'd be crying. She'd come in and feed you and change you and put you back down. You'd be asleep. Like, so stuff like that. So she definitely, I think, but on both sides, that's kind of like how my family was. It was very helpful with my mom and the kids, whether, you know, once I was way older before they started having kids. So, like, I'm 12, 13, and 16 years older than my siblings. Mm-hmm. So that's why I said, when you said my sister, I feel like she's going to be you. Like, well, now that I got kids or whatever, mom is having a blast with them because mm-hmm. they like her. I think I might be the same. I'm trying to see when it comes to parents. Like, my mom started over with her when she was 40.
My mom had me at 40.
Yeah, so y'all literally going to be the same. Like, they right now, like, I mess with them all the time. I said, Mom, y'all really Kim and Nikki Parker from the Parkers. But now that's pretty cool, that good experience like that. And that's why I think, like, one of the things, like, family is important. That's why I do say, like, it's that village thing. Because this, mm-hmm. I don't gonna lie, on us, it's pretty tough because this is me and her and then the kids. Like, we have some family, like, some friends out here. Mm-hmm. But it's not the same as if we was in our hometown. Mm-hmm. Hometown's much different. You know what I'm saying? You can't, because that's the hardest thing. You can't even, like, think about it. Like, I'm different. Like, we grew up, like, family watching this. We didn't have any strange, like, babysitters or mm-hmm. stuff coming to us. Like, I'm very different. I don't even know how to. My kids are young, so I still don't even know how to feel about, like, having a babysitter mm-hmm. come to the house one day. I don't know.
So
that seems like some white people stuff to me.
I think my, and that's the thing. I think it's cultural. I think in our community, it feels like you wear a badge of honor because you did it by yourself. Like, mm-hmm. and for me, like, when people ask, what's my biggest advice for people who are in, like, my situation, like, single mothers that are doing this, take the help. When it's offered, take the help. Like, nobody is going to give you a reward because you suffered the most mm-hmm. while you did it. Like, if you're looking for the same outcome, whether you have help while you're doing it or you don't, you're still going to make it. Like, yeah. So if you have somebody that can help you or you have resources that you could be seeking out to find help, do that. Like, if there's a babysitter that can come, you know, do your due diligence and, you know, make sure that they're qualified, do what you can. But You don't win a prize for suffering the most. Like, so for me, like, in my situation, when I moved home, when I moved back to my mom's house, I was like, okay, I got to work my behind off and make sure that in 6 months I can move out of here, because I didn't want anybody to look at me like, oh, you in your 30s and you live with your mom. And, yeah, my mama loved having me, though. It's her favorite. So I could leave, and, you know, right now, financially, I'm in a position where I could sustain myself and my child and, you know, everything, but make it harder on myself for what, you know?
Yeah, I ain't gonna lie, I wouldn't care. Like, if I had the opportunity to, by all means, I'd be moved in. Like, I mean, I have an auntie out here. When I first moved out here, I moved in with her, so I was like, shoot, if I had to go move in with her and bring the kids and everybody, she'd be happy because it's just her at the house, mm-hmm. but... Yeah, I think that's actually, like, very sound advice, because people do, I think they always feel like they got something to prove. No, yeah. I don't need no help. I'm super strong. But
you can say you did it by yourself. And then what does that get you?
And I think in a way that makes some people, I don't say jaded, but in some other way, like, when you don't want to receive help, it make it very hard for you to receive help, like, going down the line. I don't need no help. I can do this on my own. Mm-hmm. Or your expectations on others is kind of different because you feel like everybody could do stuff like you, but everybody can't handle stuff the way mm-hmm. you can. And then I think that's when people be like, well, why you can't do this? I'm a single mom. I do this, to do this, and this, and this. You can't even do this. That's some of the things that you run into just because they've made themselves become superwoman. Mm-hmm. And now superwoman has, like, super level expectations, right, whether it's from friends, family members, or, you know, a person of interest. So, but this is not the dating show. But so what made you want to, I guess, or who told you, hey, you should start going to conferences and things of that nature?
Nobody. When I first started, I, like, got into LinkedIn and I just started kind of researching, like, where do I need to be? Who do I need to talk to? Like, because I knew I didn't have anybody to ask, right? My friend that was already in information security, she wasn't, like, out there like that, like, going to conferences and, like, networking and stuff. She had already established herself. So she, not to say you don't need it, but, you know, she was secure. So I'm like, I need to find people who need it, you know? I need to find people who need the help so I can be around them so we can find it together. So I found out about Afrotech. I went, I want to say, I didn't get a scholarship to that one. I just got a student ticket that year. But it definitely introduced me to the need to network. Like, that was literally, right now, if anybody asks me how to start a career in tech, how to start a career in cybersecurity, I'm always going to talk about networking. And that was really where the push came from.
Yeah, that's what Greg and I talked about two episodes ago. It was about the way to fast track yourself to get into cybersecurity is networking, having a good mentor, having the skills to get in. And they could break down barriers that none of your degrees and certifications can do. Because all that is, it's not hearsay, like, it is an accomplishment, but nothing works better than you saying, okay, hey, I'm thinking about leaving my company. I see you work for company XYZ, and I see they got a role here. And I'm, you know, I do good work at the company. I've helped this team out a lot. And I said, hey, my friend Devaney, she's really good at this and she's interested in a role here. Like, here's her resume and stuff. And a lot of times that fast tracks you for a recruiter to call you and get her a possible interview. And if you nail it, you got a job quickly. Mm-hmm. You didn't have to be sifted through the 1,000 people that applied to the job. Mm-hmm. And so that's the thing that people are missing. But the fact that you were smart enough to say, let me research. I did so many consultations where people have not researched anything about the industry. And it doesn't baffle me because some people don't know what to research, but it's just like at some point you're going to have to research to figure out what you want to do.
Right, exactly. When I went to Afrotech, I realized, like, being in my situation, because I didn't know anything, I didn't know what I didn't know. So, like, when I got there, I had just started this master's program in security management, still not really knowing what that meant. And people were asking me, like, oh, so what area of cybersecurity do you want to be in? Girl, I don't know. The cyber one? I don't know. Like, you know, so I realized then, and again, like, back to the fast track thing, like, that fast track me to knowing you have to identify, you know, where you want to be. You have to, you know, sharpen certain skills to be in certain areas. I had no idea before going to that. So being in a conference with a massive amount of people who can just give you these nuggets, like as you're moving through these booths and, you know, meeting different people who have been in the industry for a long time or new to the industry with you, you know, like it exposes you to so many different tracks. And I was able to gain so much just from that one conference. It was a little bit different last year because they kind of turned it into a party. But yeah,
it was, I mean, the first one. And so funny enough that you said that, it's like me and a couple of professional friends have talked about, like, if they want that conference to either get better or succeed, it has to get more technical. And it has to be a reason for, like, companies didn't really want to send their employees back last year because it's like, what is going to be the benefit of me sending you here? What are the sessions that you're going to be in? And so if you can't show them any of that, then it's like, I'm not sending mm-hmm. you because, or you just pay for yourself. Mm-hmm. And so that happened because I was able to go. I'm funny enough, I was at Afrotech at the time with JP Morgan, but I had a verbal offer from Yahoo. Like, so their booth was there. So I was talking to them. I was like, yeah, you know, I'm about to be working with y'all. But they ended up pulling the offer because of, like, financial stuff for going into 2023. So I just thought that was hilarious. So, like, I was down there really, like.
You thought you was with y'all coworkers.
Yeah. Yeah, but I did a lot of networking there as well. Like, I met people, got to put, like, faces to names. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, the red tape is cut. Like, where mm-hmm. it's on LinkedIn, you got to come in and wait for them to message you back. Mm-hmm. You're right in front of the person.
A lot of them, they will have. I think a lot of people don't know this about conferences. But when you go to conferences, specifically, like, conferences targeted towards minorities, they will have their own, like, landing page for their career website mm-hmm. that's tied to that. And they have a specific team that are reviewing those resumes yeah. from that conference.
Yeah. When we was at JP Morgan, I was in some WhatsApp, and they went down there with the mission to hire people. Mm-hmm. So in certain situations like that, they are trying to hire people. That's why you saw all these big booths competing, like, with each other. And Amazon had the best booth that year.
Yeah, the Amazon booth was really nice. I met somebody from AWS, and he became one of my initial mentors.
Okay.
So he was kind of, like, telling me everything that I needed to do. I met people from Palo Alto. Like,
they had a cool booth, too.
They had a really cool booth. And all their people are always cool. I love going to their booths. But, yeah, it was really helpful.
Palo Alto cool, but they was wild in that DEF CON.
I did not see them.
What was that Black DEF CON? Cat?
Oh, I know what you're talking about with the contract. Okay, yeah.
They was wild.
I didn't go to that one. Yeah. I didn't go to that after party.
They got to apologize because mm-hmm. that was wild. Now, you're in school. This is going to be a two-part question.
Okay.
What class was the first class you took that made you like, man, I don't know if I want to do this? And then what class made you say, oh, yeah, I could do this? So, because you said I got in, I ain't really know nothing. I'm having to look up stuff outside of class to figure out what I'm doing. What class was that?
The first class that I was kind of like, it was definitely my networking course. It was like networking plus like a security plus foundations. Mm-hmm. It didn't make me, I never questioned if I could do it. It was just more so like bringing to my attention how much I did not know.
Right.
And I was like, wow, like I really got myself into something here. Like, it's not going to be easy. You know, it is going to take a lot of dedication. And at that point, I think I got in at a good time where I was mentally ready and like just having that need for my family's sake to, you know, to make this work. That all played into me being able to successfully finish. I finished my master's with a 4.0. But everything, you know, everything worked out how it should. So the class didn't scare me. I was meeting, at that time, my professor was offering like Saturday study sessions just apart from class, like on his own time, for us to study for Security Plus. Like it was a really good time. So that one kind of scared me, especially because we were doing like, we did a project with firewalls and it was basically like configuring a firewall. I had never done this. So luckily, and this is the theme in a lot of like projects and things that I've done, I was partnering with people that didn't know what they were doing. So it's kind of like, and
that it mimics real life.
Yeah, it taught me how to be on a team. And it's really what I do right now. Like, okay, I don't have this skill that you have, but okay, I can take the notes. I can do our documentation. You know, you get in where you fit in kind of thing. And I learned how to do that with that class. The class where I was like, I really like this was probably my digital forensics class, which was also a pretty technical course. But like using autopsy and like seeing what you can do, mm-hmm. it was just really cool for me to find out. Like you hear all of the things that people can do. You hear what a hacker can do, you know, on the computer, but like actually seeing it in real time and like seeing I can also do this, it was a pretty cool realization.
Yes. I know for me, forensics is what made me want to get in security.
Mm-hmm.
After I took that forensics course, I was like, man, what do I need to do against security? And met somebody who told me, granted, this is bad advice, but this was, 11 years ago? He was like, oh, go get your Security Plus. So that summer, I got my Security Plus. Thought I was ready to do something. I wasn't, but I got my Security Plus. But speaking of certifications, do you hold any certifications yet right now?
Yeah, I have. I actually just got Security Plus finally in May. My first certification was the ISC Squared, the Certified in Cybersecurity, mm-hmm. because it was free. I did it in partnership with WISIS, Women in Cybersecurity. They had like a boot camp style thing. Mm-hmm. And they were like, oh, if you finish top three, then you can get a scholarship to the WISIS conference. So I was like, oh, I got to finish top three. And I did. So that was my first certification. And that was actually the only certification that I had when I got hired for both of my security roles. So,
yeah, no, because this is the thing. Like I deal with,
I have ITIL too.
Okay. I deal with like a lot of naysayers. They're always coming in my comments, telling me things. And I'm trying to tell them, hey, I know people that don't have all these certs that you think you need. I just had a matter of fact, this comment's funny. I don't know if you saw my story the other day. But I've been getting so much, I've been getting so many responses to, like, it was a snippet out of one of our podcast episodes about WGU.
Mm-hmm.
And we pretty much chopped it up to where my friend Tavion was reacting to a video of this guy who got a cybersecurity degree from WGU and said he couldn't find a job. And we were talking about how WGU is really a better school built for people who have experience who just need to check out the checkbox.
Mm-hmm.
And then you should have heard everybody crying in the comments. And I'm like, did y'all listen to the video? Or y'all just want to be mad? Because I'm like, I'm telling you as a professional, having all those certifications don't benefit you.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually want to read. Where's that comment the man said? It was pretty funny. Oh, I found it. He didn't even say nothing back to it. He said, I'm military. The education is free. I'm assuming this is the Bachelor of Computer Science, Information Assurance, or something like that. But he said, BSCSIA. This is for WGU. I will have 10 industry certs. These will set me on a career path for cyber warfare, which has a wide outreach in the private sector. This video was an anemic attempt at best to dissuade going to an affordable college that's more accessible to people who have fast-paced lives. And I simply responded with, do you want a cookie? Because I just hate when a person, and that's the thing, I think that's why some people used to gatekeep. It's kind of like talking to kids, like when you're trying to tell a youngster something and they think they know something more than you know, mm-hmm. that you've been doing it way longer than them. and like how you people, most of us have worked people that have no certs at all. Mm-hmm. If they do that, there's minimal. It's not a lot of certifications. And I'm like, first of all, the certs they have you get, they'll have you get A+ networks plus security plus. See why they'll have you doing all these different disciplines, and you don't even know what you want to do when you get out of school. Mm-hmm. You just got a lot of certs.
Yeah, because it really doesn't make sense if you have like, if I have a CISSP and then I have like a red team kind of cert, like you're, that's two different career paths. Like you're, are you going to be in management or are you mm-hmm. going to be, you know, a hacker? Like, right. What do you want to do? So to me, the debate around like certifications versus school versus literally anything, I don't have one that I vote for.
Yeah, I think it's like, all new ones based on
what else are you doing? Like, I don't care what certification that you have. If you have a security plus, but you don't know what to do with it, I don't care. Like, will you check a box? Do I feel like certifications help you check boxes? Absolutely. There mm-hmm. are a lot of, like, you have the ATS system or, you know, whatever. You have people reviewing resumes who aren't actually in these roles that are only the hiring manager said, oh, they need to have the certified ethical hacker, you know, whatever. That's what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. So it helps you in that sense. But practically on the job, when you're in an interview, like for me, I was in school. I was also working on certifications, but I also did personal projects. So a lot of people do projects on their own. I found companies that offered project experiences for free.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Talk about that because one of the questions people have is, hey, what kind of home labs can I do with this and that? My answer is always general because, for one, I don't know what everybody wants to do. Mm-hmm. So I normally just say something like, hey, make a project that will resemble something that you would do day to day for the job you want to do. And of course, a lot of people don't know what the day to day activities look like for certain jobs they want to do. So how did you stumble upon projects that companies said to do?
Oh, I would love to talk about these. So there's a company, they're called Clicks, and I'm not affiliate. I can't say I'm not affiliated with them because I work with them sometimes, but these people do not pay me. The program is free. Like, I literally was on LinkedIn one day and someone posted about Clicks, and they have, they're partnered with IBM, and now they're also partnered with Salesforce, and they probably have multiple other partners. They actually just connected with Women in Cybersecurity, which Clicks, I'm also a member of.
Y'all need to partner with me. Partner with the podcast.
If you, I'll send you their email so you can get a link.
Cool.
But, I mean, it's a free program, so I promise y'all I'm not getting nothing out of saying this, but I found out about them. They offer like project experiences where you can do shadow sessions. So like you can do like a day in the life of a cybersecurity analyst. They have like where you can see practically what's happening in these roles. You're not just hearing about them and like what you need to know to do them. You're seeing what's actually happening, you know, behind the curtain. So the shadow sessions are really cool. I did the project sprints, and they're offered in cohorts where it's like 3 weeks, and they partner you with, it's like five of y'all at the start.
How many at the finish?
By the end, I know in my first one, like, we had people that kind of were tacked on at the very end because their entire group left them, and it was just only one person, so they came into our group. But you do, like, the first one that I did was performing a vulnerability assessment as a security analyst, and it was because they're partnered with IBM, we had real data, and it was the first one was based on the Uber breach, and so we were basically given the scenario with like dummy data and basically told like, okay, how would you investigate this? Like, go ahead and do your vulnerability assessment, and they walk you through the steps, but they don't spoon feed everything to you. They don't handhold you through the entire process. Like, there's a lot of like, you have to go out and they're going to give you the information, but you got to find out what to do with it. So it taught me how to use like MMAP and Wireshark and like all those things that you would hear about that I'm learning, you know, what is this for my security plus? But then here doing this project, I can actually see hands-on how to use it. And again, I was partnered with somebody who had just finished like a SANS training, and he was actually an instructor for the company after for a while, but he knew what he was doing. So he was like showing us, okay, this is what you do with this. So it's a really good learning experience, again, for me to figure out how much I did not know. And yeah, it worked out for me. So I did two of those sprints, and that just being going through that program for free, I put all that on my LinkedIn as I went. That's a really big key for me. Like, everything that you do, make sure you post and make sure you're talking about it. Like, people be like, how do you get all these opportunities? Because everything that I do, somebody knows about it. Mm-hmm. It's not just hiding on my resume, you know, for whatever random jobs that I apply to. Everybody is going to know what I'm doing. So when I finished Clicked, I posted the certification that they gave me on LinkedIn. And that was all I had. But in my first initial interviews for my two roles that I've held in security so far, that was the only project, that was the only experience that I could talk about. But that still gave me a benefit over other candidates because I had practical experience.
Just listening to your story, you were going to be successful no matter what path you went down because you are good at doing the big P, and that's preparation. A lot of people, like you, it's not a Bible podcast, seek and ye shall find. That's what you did. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are waiting on a magical answer to tell them, oh, you should do this and this. But I'm pretty sure when you found Clicked, did it just start off by you just typing in cybersecurity projects or something?
I wasn't typing in cybersecurity projects, but I really was deep into the cybersecurity community on LinkedIn. So I had my timeline on LinkedIn was curated for mm-hmm. any opportunity that was coming up for anybody that wanted to get into cybersecurity. I was going to see it.
Yeah.
So I was on LinkedIn like that was my job. Facebook, Instagram, that was gone. I was on LinkedIn all day long.
See, you was dedicated.
Yeah.
But you know what's funny? In the way that LinkedIn can work for you, Twitter can service that as well.
Mm-hmm.
I've known people who've gotten jobs off of Twitter based off like what they post about and whatever. But no, when students, whenever y'all see this, or clients, I'm sorry, y'all not students, y'all clients. Whenever you see this, or future clients, when you go about showing and broadcasting what you're knowing, and I tell these people all the time about branding, and I say, hey, I'm not telling you to brand as an influencer. I'm telling you to simply brand yourself as a person that's pivoting into cybersecurity, what you're learning about, showing your personality and your passion behind it. Because sometimes when it comes to you, I've showed them this plenty of times. There have been times I applied to jobs, and I'm like, you know what? I really like this company. Let me see if I follow anybody that works there, or let me see if I can find who's on that team that works there, which I've done both. And based off of my content, based on what I post on LinkedIn, these people say, oh, you'll be a great addition to the team. Let me tell the hiring managers or whatever. So if you are doing all these things on your LinkedIn, just starting off, and now somebody goes to check like your thing, if you sent them a message, they say, oh, this person is serious. They're trying to get to it. We need people like this here. And that's when people want to help you. But if you don't have anything on your LinkedIn, but you stay and you want to do something, and it's already hard enough to prove what you know, it's going to be harder for you to get a referral or somebody to even want to help out. So all I'm trying to say is you don't have to mimic what she did, but you need to do some of it.
That's actually like what you said is exactly how I got my job right now. Literally from me posting all the organizations that I'm a part of, all of the everything that I participate in, all the accomplishments, you know, just along my entire journey, everything is posted. So when somebody is looking for a certain skill set, if I match that skill set and I come up because it's posted on my profile, my current manager was looking for someone who was involved in organizations. They had actually, he was in communication with another WESIS member who mm-hmm. was going to have my job, and she ended up, she got like her dream job, so she was no longer in the running for the role. But she was like, hey, check out somebody who's a member of WESIS. I started a WESIS chapter at my campus. So when you type in, let me see who in WESIS, I'm the one that come up.
All I hear is WESIS right now.
It's WESIS, Women in Cybersecurity, and it's pronounced WESIS like We Sisters.
Okay, I see. I never knew how it was pronounced. Like yeah. I said, I met
a lot of people say WESIS, but it's WESIS, like We Sisters.
Yeah, I met two of your WE sisters a couple months ago. But yeah. That's cool, man.
My manager wrote me. He asked me to apply for this job. Like, yeah, I didn't apply.
And so that's
he found me.
That's one of the other reasons why I do want to be in management. So I can say, I'm going to pull somebody in here.
Mm-hmm.
If y'all ain't going to get right, it's not a regret because I didn't really have the opportunity to, sign off for people getting hired. Like, one of my jobs I really loved, but our analyst was all men. And that's the other thing that used to be hard, too. It used to be hard to find the women interested in doing some of these jobs or the applicants. I always wanted a woman to be on the team. I was like, I don't care if they white, black, or brown or whatever. They're going to show them all up, and they're going to have to either get with it or get lost because mm-hmm. they was too lazy for me. And I was like, I need somebody who's going to act like they got to pay for baby formula on my mm-hmm. team. I said, I need that. I never got it on that team. And it's hard to get really anywhere because it's so male dominated.
And that's a good point. So, like, you have people, you have men who are similar to yourself that want more women, who are allies for women in cybersecurity and, you know, want to promote the diversity. But you also, on the other end, have to look at the culture that you're bringing that woman into. Oh, so yeah. When I was in my previous role, it was at a contract job, and no shade to the job at all. It was like nobody was mean to me. It was just the environment was very much like you said, with like it was an older company. Mm-hmm. Everybody that had been there had been in IT for like their entire careers, and they were like 60 something. So coming into that environment, I just felt very isolated. Like, and it was the first time that I ever, you know, I feel like when I'm at conferences or when I'm, you know, speaking to other minorities and say, the question always comes up, like, how do you feel like, how do you manage being a Black woman in tech? And I'm like, before that experience, I never considered my identity as a Black woman in anywhere. I was a teacher. I was in customer service. I was in spaces where you're supposed to be. And that was my first experience realizing that I was in a space where I wasn't supposed to be. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of pressure. And I felt like, if I come into this job and I'm not on my game, like I now represent every Black woman for the rest of the time for these people. And I wasn't in a good headspace, like realizing that, because the culture didn't contribute to me being comfortable there to show up as myself. My current company, completely different. My manager, just like he found me, he was very intentional about curating our entire team. So my manager is a white male. Everybody else, a straight white male, everybody else on our team is not. So we're a team of six, and he's the only one that fits the mold, right? Mm-hmm. Like he made it a point to go out and find other people that, you know, could fill those
smart
roles.
Person.
Right.
Nah, I can't wait. Like one day I'm going to have a live stream. It's like everybody dealt with microaggressions. We're going to be on the live stream. We're just going to talk about all the microaggressions that we've dealt with. Just because you feel them and you can't say much because you're just taking it until you can do what you got to do.
They didn't give me a SOC analyst role because he found out that I was a single mom. And he was like, oh, well, this is an overnight position. Like, are you going to, I don't think this will work for you. Like, blatantly told me that in the interview and I didn't get the job.
You should have reported them.
I really should have. I was very green. I didn't know anything at the time.
And it's really only because even if you didn't even plan to work there, which it don't sound like it's a place to work at.
No.
But it would have probably got him out of there and got somebody else in there. Because it's like, okay, what does that have to do with me? Like, you don't know anything about my situation besides I have a child. But I think, and like I said, it's funny, every time I'm having podcasts with people, I'm having video ideas and stuff I want to probably address in a video that's not an interview. I think women run into that a lot of not getting hired because of either they got kids or something like that. Mm-hmm. They feel like the childless woman or the childless man or even the man with kids would be a better fit than the Black mom because they know that 9 out of 10, she don't have any help and she always got to do something for the kid. Mm-hmm. I really feel like that's a hiring bias that a lot of people have on them.
Yeah.
Keywords, I feel. I don't know it. I can't prove it. I don't even think there's a metric out there to prove it besides just finding people who've experienced this thing, being moms, and figuring out how that goes.
I actually had another interview, and it came up, and I was like, I'm very triggered because this actually has happened. Like, somebody asked me, oh, well, can you handle being on call because you're a mom? And I'm like, yes. Like, what I do outside of work, mm-hmm. don't concern you. Like when I log off of here, whatever I have going on, I will manage that. And then if you do hire me and you feel like my personal life is intervening with my work life, we'll handle that at that point. Mm-hmm. But don't count me out for a role that I'm clearly qualified for or overqualified for because you feel like I have a child, so I might not be able to keep up. I've been keeping up.
Yeah. That's like I said, but I like through interviews when they show that it's not a place that you need to be at.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you ever ask me something that dumb.
Exactly.
Like, I don't know. I think I had some friends that had interviews with people showed up late and was kind of disrespectful. I walk off. I'd be like, all right, I'm gone. Go waste somebody else's time. Please do. So now, you got the interview and you got the job. Now, refresh my memory of, I know you're doing security engineering. I know you say you meet with a lot of vendors. And so could you talk about your job and like day to day at a high level? I don't want you exposing too much about who vendors maybe you guys work with or things you do that way. If somebody ever searches your name and sees it, you know, just keep it as high level as possible.
Mm-hmm. So me, day to day, it could be a little bit of everything. Like my title is security engineer, but I could be doing GRC work. I could be doing I could be doing SOC analyst work. I could be doing just about anything. So a large portion of my job is identifying vendors that we're going to work with, or that's mm-hmm. been the projects that I've been on, identifying vendors that we're going to work with, really doing the process from start to finish, like doing the POCs with the different vendors, testing the product out, comparing it to other products on the market. I use a lot of Gartner for comparison purposes. And basically seeing how those tools would work in our environment, if it would fit the need for us. And then if I determine that they will, then we do the business side of things, handle the money, and I work on the implementation of that product, getting it up and running, doing the training for other individuals in the organization on how to use it, and a lot of the maintenance piece. So if you hear this, if your title is security engineer, you're probably not going to be doing all this. Like in larger companies, you're probably only going to work on like one piece of this. But for me, I work for a startup, so I can pretty much have my hand in anything. Like for one of our products that we use, I typically don't manage that product, but there's only one other individual that manages it. So he was out one day. So my manager was like, okay, somebody got to figure out how to do it. So now I'm the person. Yeah. So I do a lot.
So you're like a security generalist engineer.
Basically.
No, I think that's a good way for people to start off. I forgot who I was talking to recently, and they said they pretty much started off as a generalist. And I was like, it's a good way to start off, because if pretty much lets you figure out what you want to mm-hmm. do and what you don't want to do.
Right.
And so I think that's good. Since you said you could be doing some SOC work, or you could be doing the GRC stuff, any cool tools that you've gotten to learn how to use?
This video is being sponsored by Textual Consulting. Are you still struggling to get into cybersecurity? Are you not getting interviews? Do you have a bad resume? Or is it all the above? Well, if that's you, then we got you covered at Textual Consulting. My name is Henry Davis. I'm a career coach and a cybersecurity professional, and I've helped hundreds, maybe even thousands of people get into cybersecurity with my coaching and my content that you've seen in various places. Now, I specialize in specifically getting people in the blue team, that would be incident response or SOC analysts. I can cover everything from your entry level to your medium to your advanced skills, and really help you outperform your resume. You don't believe me? Check out some of these testimonials that I've had from recent clients. So if you're interested, click the link in my bio, textualconsulting.com/offerings, to see what offerings that we have available for you. Now, back to the show.
So anything around application security, so like SAS, NDAS tools, things like that, I never thought coming into this space, like whenever people asked me originally, what area of security do you want to be in? GRC was like the one that stood out the most. Because that felt like, and I feel like a lot of people do this when they say they want to get into security, like they want to gravitate towards GRC because
they think it's easy.
Like you have transferable skills because you did XYZ at another company. So for me, I didn't want to just gravitate to GRC because it was going to be the easiest for me. Do I like it? Yeah, in a way. But I'm actually really fascinated by the application security, product security side. Mm-hmm. But I do not know how to code. So that opened up a whole new can of worms, because now I have to learn how to do that in order to explore this whole other subset. So whenever they say you don't need a code to be in cyber, that's not always true. You should probably learn just in case.
Well, you're bringing up another point. Most people are fixating on the easiest things for us to do. They're never saying, hey, go do this so you can do this hard role. Because you know why? They know it would take time for the person to do it. Mm-hmm. A lot of times people are trying to sell people to do different things. Like for me, I do tell people to get in the GRC sometimes on the call, but it's not because it's easy. I don't tell them sometimes I feel like their skill set better much lines up with it, and it'll be easier for you probably to do this versus, like you said, want to be a SOC analyst. So nobody has no skills. They got to go through. Maybe they want to do the blue team level one. They want to do this SIM project and all these other things. And now they got to learn about all these different domains. And not only that, be confident, be good at it in the interview. And a lot of people aren't good at that. And so I've like met with people that's like have law backgrounds, but they did different stuff. I was like, it's like you're doing an audit right here, sir.
Right.
And I'm like, you need to go ahead and skedaddle right there and figure out that jargon.
And
you don't know.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't think there's anything wrong with starting in the space where your skills are the most transferable. But I do now see the error in being complacent and in staying there just because it's easy. Like if you got into security in a GRC role because that was the door that opened for you, that makes sense. But don't cut yourself off from the technical side of things just because you feel like you can't do it. Yeah. Free Code Camp is right there. Harvard CS50 is right there. All these free training programs, they're right there. Google is right there. Like if you want to be more technical, you can.
And I think there are some technical GRC roles. I think it's just a misconception that people don't have to be technical to do GRC roles. When you do some of your SOC stuff, do y'all have like a SIM?
So we have managed them. So we outsource it, basically. Okay. So we get the escalated tickets.
Got it. Dang, you can't tell me who y'all vendor is. Do they do a good job, whoever they are?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll tell you after.
Yeah, most of them don't do a good job.
Yeah.
That's just like, we going to eventually get some more money and bring some people in town.
A lot of it has to do with the configurations, too. Like, you have to fine-tune the alerts that you want. You have to, you know, you have to be specific as far as what you're looking for. It's not a set it and forget it thing.
Yeah, but a lot of them aren't even good at that. A lot of them is just like, this is a contract, some money. Mm-hmm. So that's like the game you play when you get, like, you manage it out. And then
So ours is not like a MSP where, like, there's a, like, another human who works for another company. Mm-hmm. It's like a specific company that's dedicated just to doing this.
Oh, so y'all have, so like, for example, I used to work for MSS, but in the MSS, we had different functionalities. Like the contract I was on, we were dedicated to that one client. Mm-hmm. I had no other clients I was working on for Optiv at the time. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's like that for you. Y'all got to say, hey, we want a dedicated client, and that's what we want to do for this thing, because that's really the only best way that your environment is going to be taken care of the best. If they're just sending escalations out, that's a no-go.
Yeah. And I think for us, because we're so new, we're still building out our security program. We're still building out our product. So we haven't had as much action yet. Like, I mean, knock on wood, look, I ain't looking for it. But we don't have enough evidence to tell, you know.
Yeah.
To really me.
They definitely should get at me. Mm-hmm. Now, so you've been 1 year in. I still call you a newbie. How does that feel? How does it feel to be a year into your career? You finish your master's, all from nothing. You know, hard work, determination, got you where you want to be at. Mm-hmm. How does that feel?
It feels great, but I don't know. Like,
is it surreal?
It's surreal, and I sometimes have to, like, check myself and realize, like, not to pat myself on the back, but, like, what I've done, because there's always more to do.
Yeah.
I never, obviously, getting into this, like I said, I thought I was signing up for a technical skill to go do my 9-to-5 and be done with it, but it's not. There's always something else. I'm studying for 2 certifications right now. Like, I finally got the Security Plus, and, you know, I have my master's now, so I'm going to add some cloud certs on top of that. I'm studying for the CISA.
Which one?
Which cloud cert?
No, you said CISA. Is it
the CISA.
Okay.
Yeah, the auditor. Got it. And that's mainly not because I want to utilize it. It's more so because I already took the class for it in school, so I might as well.
You do want to utilize it.
I mean, I would like to check. It's going to check my box later on down the line.
She's like, hey, I got this cert, this cert, this cert, this cert. Yeah. I want to get paid this, which works sometimes. A lot of people think they get all them certs.
I used my, not my certifications, but I did use my master's status in negotiating my pay
in
my current role. I was like, look, y'all hiring me in December. Or no, I got hired in September. And I was like, I'm almost done with my master's. I'll be done by the middle of next year. So the price is going to go up, so you might as well pay me today, you know, before all the recruiters see that I have this master's and they start, you know, the influx is in my LinkedIn. Like, just solidify my spot here right now, and we'll be good.
Yeah.
And they did.
That's good. I told somebody that, too. We were talking about, who was I talking about? Or I was explaining to them, like, when it comes to negotiations, that's when your education and stuff plays a part based on your peers and what they did, how it was you interviewed. That's when you can start asking for what you're asking for. Because I was talking to a recruiter the other day, and she was like, I forgot what she said she wanted, what they were looking for. I was like, yeah. I said, plus, I said, I ain't go to, I think it was like a management role. I said, I ain't go to get my master's for nothing. And so I was like, you know, all this stuff comes into play.
Yeah, and you can actually use it to compare against the market. Like when a lot of people say, and especially for us, because a lot of us were never taught how to negotiate. They say, oh, make sure you negotiate when you get a role, and nobody knows what that means. Like a lot of people interpret that as, let me ask for more money because I should have it. No, whenever you're in a negotiation, you have to come with facts. You have to come with receipts. Like this is how much people in this role are making. With this type of experience, with this, you know, this level of education, you know, so when you're able to present that and say, this is why I'm asking for this amount of money, and you actually, the top of your range is actually lower than what I should be making, then at that point, they can go back and say, yeah, this is a really good candidate with these qualifications because of the evidence that you presented, and get your bag.
Yeah. Now, some companies are good at just having one range be for everybody. The other people try to get you with that. Well, I don't know, what's that TikTok sound? Well, you know, black people. Well, they'll hit you with that and like, well, you stay in Texas. And I was like, listen, it's not 2019 no more. If you don't pay me this money. It happened one time talking to T-Mobile. They was interested in a role and I applied to it. I applied to it because it had a nice range. Then they told me in person, yeah, since you're in Texas, you'll be in region 3 and this will be the South. I said, that ain't going to work. Yeah, I might as well not call me back unless y'all want to play at the numbers I get, y'all. And they ain't never call me back. I was like, bet. I was like, you're not only finna try to pay, make me make a lateral move and make me come to the office every day. Mm-hmm. Rick Ross got that. They remind me of that little meme. No, sir. Not me.
Yeah, at this point, I'm spoiled working remote and making security engineer salary. I say all the time, it would take a good amount of change to get me to come about this house.
Yeah, and you getting California pay. So that's really what's got you spoiled.
Well, they also do the region. So, like, I was told that if I was in San Francisco, because when I went to San Francisco, I didn't want to come back. So I told my manager, and he was like, well, if you move, they'll give you a cost of living increase.
I think you're just saying it just because you was there, though.
I loved it, the weather. Like
I've only been to Burbank.
Okay, yeah. That's where my brother used to live, Burbank.
Yeah, I used to, I didn't work for Disney, but Disney was our client.
Mm-hmm.
So.
No, it was really nice. And just being able to, like, go out onto the beach in L.A. or, like, the pier in San Francisco, it was really nice. It overlooks the water and it overlooks that that one prison. I can't remember the name of it.
Somebody, San Francisco?
Yeah.
I don't know. I ain't never been to San Fran.
Somebody in the comments will say the name of it. Because my sister called me and she was like, oh, do you see the prison? And I'm like, I didn't know that's what I was looking at. But yeah.
Did you go
it's
like.
It's beautiful.
You know, they have like them steep hills and stuff like that. Like,
yes.
Did you see that?
And I got in a driverless car.
Oh, the Waymo?
The Waymo. Yeah. They're all over the city.
How
they
you
can't.
Like it?
They can't go on the highways. So I felt better about
I
that.
I think Waymo is good. Especially if Waymo really wants to make that bread. I think they may have they're smart. I think they do got a niche when they're saying, hey, we want to help your kids get home from school.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people don't feel comfortable with people riding the car of their kids. So it's what you call it. And if Waymo say, hey, you know what? We'll be the cars that help the ladies get home from the club and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That will be a good selling point. They're finna take some market share from them if they can make sure stuff don't crash and it's enough bandwidth and all that other stuff. Uber and Lyft, they better watch out.
Yeah. It's when I first saw it, when I got to San Francisco, because they're everywhere, like literally everywhere you turn, they're there. And I was like, I'm not getting in the car without a driver. But I ended up in one. Day.
Shoot.
That ride was a little bit cheaper than the Uber and the Lyft. So.
Yeah. That's because they're getting that data.
Mm-hmm.
But like, shoot, hey, same way that drivers, if I have a rig with somebody that's driverless, I'm definitely getting paid.
So like, the upside of being in a Waymo, again, my Uber driver from the airport to the hotel, this man got road rage with somebody in the car next to us. Like, he cut the guy off. The guy, like, honked the horn at him. He pulled up next to the guy and was, like, eyeing him in his car. And I'm like, sir, Do that on your own time. Right. So in the Waymo, I don't got to worry about that. Right. Nobody has to talk to me. I don't have to have a small talk.
I don't mind it. Sometimes if, you know, the car ain't stinking. I remember one time we got in an Uber. It smelled like baby diapers. It was stinking. We reported that. I had never reported an Uber ride before that person. I couldn't. I said, ain't no way your car should be smelling like this. You should be working for these people.
I've gotten in some that smell like armpits, smell like smoke. Yeah.
A whole mess.
The Waymo was very clean. This is not a promotion for Waymo. It was just a fun time.
Waymo, it is a promotion for you. Like I said, I'm going to send this to whoever.
Get the bag by any means.
Yes. Whoever does social media marketing for Waymo, y'all will be seeing this clip. I'm going to put it in somebody's inbox. We'll get somebody over there to you. So you named pretty much like all your functionality, which is cool. I think you're setting yourself up to have a promising career. What do you want to, I remember you shared this with me. I know what you want to do after this role. And so I know you're working on the code. What else are you working on to ensure that that's probably like your next role to do?
Right now I'm really focused in on the application security. So I went to Black Hat a few weeks ago and I met Tanya Jenka, who wrote the book, Bob and Alice Learn Application Security.
I don't know who that is. So you have to share that.
Yeah. She had a community called We Hack Purple. Her ad is She Hacks Purple. Also, this is not a promotion, but you know, like my friend said,
I'm gonna put the book right here.
So I actually got her book for free from going to the conference, and I started reading it, on the plane ride back. And it was really good. It was focused around like how to do application security, what that means, how to grow an application security program. And I'm in a really good position right now with my role being in a startup because I can build out our application security program. So that's kind of where my focus is right now, learning what I need to do application security.
Yeah.
And also how to build that and expand that in my organization and be able to have like that as my baby at my company.
Yeah. I mean, at least the fact that you got, you know, resources that you can reach out to, mm-hmm. I think that makes it like perfect for you to do. So I didn't ask you this, and I really asked this because you said it's about the money, you said it's about the check. And you gloated a little bit that you're getting this California money or this Texas money, and you don't have to tell us specifically numbers or whatever. You can just use a range so you can be high level. Because you know what happens. Somebody in your family or something going to see this.
I'm going through a divorce. So I'm not going to say exactly how much I make, but.
Don't say it at all. Listen, she worked for free.
Right. I'm poor. Please help me.
Because their show be like, I know one of my homies, he did the show, and now everybody just think he got it. Because when we titled the name of the show, I'm like.
All I'm going to say is it's worth it. Yeah. That's what I'm going to say. It's worth it.
That's good.
And there's a lot of room for growth also. I'm making more money than I ever made in my whole life. It's a life-changing career opportunity. And it's something that it's one of those things like you say, oh, I want to be successful. Oh, I want to, you know, mm-hmm. have this amount of money. I want to have the nice cars. I want to, you know, do all the things. And you say that's what you want. But coming from where I'm from, a lot of people don't get it. Like, it's just a want. It's just something we talk about, you know, as we're sitting, you know, in our mediocre homes with our mediocre jobs. Like, I guess I wanted it for myself, but I never really saw it for myself. So now that I'm here.
Why do you think you didn't never see it for yourself?
I didn't see nobody else do it.
I'm glad you said that.
Like.
I just shot an episode with, shout out my boy D'Amico Chambers, the Cloud Tech Big Unk. We were talking about that. We were talking about one of the reasons for the show, the exposure of the various different things you can do, and whether it's cybersecurity, tech, any type of domain that's tech related, what you can do, especially for Black people. What we typically know with those median salaries and average salaries is in the Black families and what they do and don't see. And basically most of them are impoverished or in the poverty line, especially with inflation the way it's set up now. Not seeing things.
Mm.
Like that's why more kids aren't in STEM in certain places, because they don't see anybody in STEM. The same reason why people are abandoning school as well, too, is like the kids in the hood or wherever the suburbs, wherever they stay, they see people that went to school that's struggling like their parents. So they like, why would I go waste money and go get in school to struggle like y'all when I can either get it on my own or find another alternative to get it? And that's why they some of them are in the field. So when I come through and hopefully a young, you know, 10, 15, 16, 17-year-old comes through here and see some of my past episodes of me having people on there that's exceeded networks of like, you know, $1 million or making 200, 300, 400K in a year. And they did it just from hard work and sacrificing and setting themselves up the right way. That's really what it's about. That's brick by brick how you start changing everything. Say, that's how you start seeing somebody. So now that little girl say, hey, I want to be like Devaney. I want to go get in what's called. Or maybe it's a mom out there right now that's like, I've been looking for stuff. Because I've dealt with like, you know, not dealt with. I don't want to say it like that. Like I'm a homework or something. I've had consultations with like, you know, single mothers or wives or something like that. And they're looking for something to do to help with the family. So I definitely think I'm glad that you just said that. Like that's just added a testament to the reason why that the show was here and people can just see it. Because once you see it, you can believe it. Like for me, like you said, meager homes, when I moved out here 8 years ago to where my aunt stays in Little Elm, I was like, hold on, I don't see no hood. Everybody got cars and garages, they grass up kept. I changed my mindset of what I thought. Like I know going through school, I think I said, you know, I wanted to make like $80,000. To me, that was a lot coming from where I came from. My parents ain't making no $80,000.
My first job, when I got my first like contract role in security, it was $65,000. That was the most money I ever made. And I was like, wow, like people just out here living like this. Yeah, I make way more than that now. But but that was like, it's crazy. Like when you see what you think is supposed to be life-changing money and like what's really possible. And like you say, like you have to be able to see it. Like my parents, they worked very hard, but my dad drove trucks. My mom worked in the grocery store. So I had a limited view of what was possible. So
yeah, blue collar view. But I mean, that's in the same vein about that. That's the whole reason why that I respect the working man and woman's dollar, because it's like, it ain't easy. When anybody book a service or something with me, I respect it. You didn't have to spend no money with me. You don't just have this money lying around to waste with me. So I always try to make sure somebody get their worth when it comes to me. Because I come from that. Come from a dad, cement mason, mom used to work at Walmart, now works in childcare. You know, I'm not too out of touch. Like recently, shout out to Charleston White. that little Yachty, he out of touch with reality, homie. He been rich a little too long. He don't know what he's talking about. I'm kind of scared about his mindset. Like he said that, but it's a lot of people when I see these differences and various opinions.
That was a good impersonation.
Thank you. I've been working on my impersonations for real because I see everybody impersonating him. So I might even title that short. Charleston White talks about a little Yachty education. But no, in all seriousness though, I see these absurd conversations on Twitter and everywhere else and people are talking like crazy. I do see some form of it being elitism. People used to say that a lot of us are veterans, like I'll be on year 11 of my career next year. So the things that we tell people, the newer people were trying to say we were gatekeeping. It's not like I still have a viral tweet that said, hey, people want six-figure tech jobs without six-figure skills. And people said I was gatekeeping, but I'm like, I'm just telling you, like, it's the truth. I was like, a lot of the people that got hired in 2021, 2022, whatever, they got laid off and they still trying to shake back. Because some companies, like the big fan companies, they hire people just so the talent, the competitor can have them, and then they laid them off.
Wow.
Yeah. So all that stuff happens and people just want the shortcuts to success, but I'm telling you, you won't be able to sustain it. It's like a person, most people who probably hit the lotto probably go broke. Most athletes and NBA players, a lot of them, they go broke. Because in a sense, it's kind of a shortcut to a lot of money. Whereas a lot of people who go little by little of earning their money, they are much better with their money. So you've been praying for, you know, $100,000 job, $150,000 job. You came in, it's the $50,000 you got now. What you going to do with $150,000?
And lifestyle creep is real.
Oh, yeah.
It's so real. Like some days I'm like, I look at how much I have in my check after I pay my bills and I'm like, dang, all I have is XYZ left over after I paid all these bills. And I'm like, it was months where I wouldn't have anything left over. Mm-hmm. I would be in the negative. Like, I got to check myself. Like,
I think what's the thing called? Like, it's either called survivor's remorse or mm-hmm. some of the other stuff. A lot of people who hit hard times or got laid off, something like that. What happens when you start making a lot more money, sometimes you feel guilty for spending your money. Mm-hmm. You don't want to spend it. You always feel like maybe tomorrow's the day they say, hey, we don't need your services no mm-hmm. more. No matter how long you've been in the industry. And that's how you can feel like that. But you got to be able to enjoy, you know, the spoils of, you know, your working whenever you can. Like, mm-hmm. just don't go overboard, plan it out.
You got to have balance.
Yeah, because that'll always be there. But nah, you're right, though. But the funny you say is that, well, I only got, like, that's the phrase, like, what you mean? Some people ain't got that.
Exactly. Like, I really got to check myself because I still know people. And like you say, the survivor's remorse for me is a little bit different because I know it's other people in the same situation that I'm in. I know other single moms or I know other moms, you know, just with families that would love to have, you know, my job and, you know, my salary and all these things. And it's like, I see how hard they work and I feel guilty because like I'm playing with my friends in San Francisco and my company. Like, I feel guilty sometimes, like, that other people in this situation don't have this.
Yeah. I don't feel guilty because I work hard for it. And I don't feel guilty because I've tried to tell people who don't have it what they need to do to get it and they don't want to listen.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the most frustrating things of telling somebody, hey, like 4 years ago, hey, y'all need to get into this. Mm-hmm. But then you see them a year or two after that, they frustrating about, you know, the companies ain't hiring in the area or they only got a $2 raise or something. You know, it's like,
it's the whole lead a horse to water. Like, I have people call me all the time, like, and they will list out their list of excuses as to why they can't do XYZ thing that I've done. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's when, yeah, I'm going to play my single mama card. Like, I got a baby sitting right here with me. I'm doing this by myself. Like, not by myself. I tell y'all, my mom will be helping me. But
I mean, you're the one that's cracking open the books and
exactly.
studying.
Exactly. Like, you know, my situation is not ideal. You know, everybody wants to wait on ideal circumstances to make a move. You cannot. Like, nothing about me getting into this field, getting into this industry, nothing was ideal. But I did it because it had to be done. So when you call me with excuses about why you can't do it and you're in a better situation than me, like, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear an excuse.
My brother, I'm like, you're childless and you got way more free time than I got. What's your excuse? I wish I would have had a mentor my age to tell me if I had somebody give me the play by play, I'd be so up right now. 10 years ago.
Literally. Like, and I will. Like, it's frustrating because
I don't know more. You got to show me. You have to show me you're worth my time. So, like, one of my good friends, who's more like a little brother himself, years ago, him, two of my other younger cousins, I put them in the group because I knew they all want to do some tech stuff. I'm telling them what to do. Out of blood, he's the only person that responded. So he's the one that initially started getting more of my time and actually saying, yo, I'm doing this, or I just got the job doing this, and all this stuff. And now to see him now, it's because he listened. Mm-hmm. Or the same thing when you was talking about what you was posting on LinkedIn and everything else. Like, every time I'm going to bring up Dayspring probably to the day I die in 2020, the stuff he was doing as a, I think he might have been 19 or 20 at the time. He was blogging, talking about his experiences, journeys. When he reached out to me, it was value in when he reached out to me and made me say he was going to be pretty much like, you know, a mentee. I was like, all them things, like, work. You only going to get out what you put in. Mm-hmm. And I know we coming back to something that we talked about earlier, but it's like everything is a circle. It's going to be a time, and you probably already got some now, but you'll probably end up finding more mentees just mm-hmm. because you're like, man, they out here, they trying to get it.
Yeah. And that's what that's what makes you want to work harder and go harder for your mentees that you see actually doing it. Because I have so many people that come and they want the information. You want to waste my time and have me tell you for an hour about how I got into cybersecurity and then I never hear from you again. That's draining and I'm not doing it. So
didn't you already make a video on that?
I think I made a TikTok, but I'm going to put it on my YouTube.
Yeah, just make a video. And that, like, when people, it kind of grinds my gears a little bit when people hit me up and like, oh, how'd you get into cybersecurity? And you're not looking at my LinkedIn and saying, oh, I'm a content creator. Let me see if he created content on it. I sent him a playlist that says cybersecurity journey. And I'm like, here you go.
Yeah. And that's why I started getting more on the side of, like, creating content and stuff like that, just to have a place to say, like, okay, this is where you can start. Like, if you come to me and you want to know how to get into cybersecurity, you better know what cybersecurity is. You better know. You better have some kind of foundation. And if you don't, I'm going to send you to go get that foundation before I invest my time into you.
No, hey, that's facts. Let me ask you this. What is something that you wish I would have asked you that I didn't ask you?
I feel like you covered all the bases. I guess like the importance of like organizations, because that's something really big for me. That's been a really big part of my journey.
Let's talk about that, because I've actually been, I know WESIS, they put us in a group with some people, and I definitely, they got like a good presence out here. I actually want to do some more work with them. But yeah, let's talk about that. And I guess how either somebody can start an organization in that area, or how do they find the good ones to join?
Yeah, so a lot of the organizations that I'm a member of, so what I did, because I was a student, so that goes back to like the benefit of being in school. You do get a lot of perks that you wouldn't get if you don't have a .edu address. So for me, being a student, I was able to join all of these organizations for like $20 a year. And I was able to kind of like trial and test out which ones I got the most value from, which ones worked for me in my life, you know, which ones was doing a little bit too much. Like, because it is a level of involvement that you have to have when you sign up for these things, or that you should, because you don't want to just be, you know, blindly signing up for a slew of organizations and then you're not going to uphold your commitments by being a part of the organization. So I joined Women in Cybersecurity. That was the first one that I joined, and I started a chapter at my school. Honestly, the chapter that I started didn't really go anywhere because I was virtual, and a lot of people that were in my classes, they had children and lives and everything, and they just weren't as invested in doing all the things like I was. So I was kind of by myself in that. But WESIS is an international organization. So they have an international presence. They have a yearly conference. But then they also have, they have a Dallas chapter. They have a Houston affiliate chapter, like, and the student chapters. So you can join one of your local chapters and also join WESIS national. So that was one of the first ones I did. And I gained a lot of access to resources that I would have never found out about. Like, I found out about Last Mile organization, who their mission, they help cybersecurity students at 2-year, 4-year colleges, basically with the obstacles that are not specifically school related. Like, okay, yeah, if you're in school, you can get a scholarship, but they're probably going to send that money to the school. You'll never get access to it. If you get too much, they'll take it back. Mm-hmm. Like, so with Last Mile, during my transition before I got my first job, they actually awarded me a grant because my car wasn't working. Like, I needed new tires for my car. Like, I didn't have insurance for months. Like, I was going through like a personal obstacle, and they were able to grant me money to get through life to be able to continue my education. So I found that through WESIS. The ISC Square Bootcamp, did that through them. I'm also a member of NSBE, National Society of Black Engineers. So they have a yearly conference. I got a scholarship through them. And these are like, when I say it's money out here, like when you go looking for it. So I applied to, actually I found out about NSBE through the Houston chapter scholarship. And then I joined NSBE National, and I got a bigger scholarship the next year. I went to their conference, but it was just another opportunity, very similar to my experience at Afrotech, just meeting and networking with like-minded individuals, increasing your exposure to the field, opportunities, things like that. So I'm a really big advocate for joining organizations, because you're going to find people who are at all stages of their career, and they're going to put you in the door for opportunities that you may not have had those opportunities for, just simply because y'all in the same organization.
Yeah, that's cool. I hope y'all took the notes on that, because I'm like, hold on, I should have hit them up years ago when I was, look, I was like,
hey. It's not too late.
Man, I don't know. It's probably too late, but I ain't been in school in years.
So. You don't know. Okay, so every organization that I'm talking about, some of them do have scholarships and things that are specifically for students, but you can join these organizations at any time in your career.
I was talking about the scholarship stuff.
Well, some of them, even with WESIS, like the opportunities that they have, they're not just for students. Okay. So, like, I'm doing the SANS training scholarship cohort that they have going on. So they're partnered with SANS to, if you, it's like in levels. So the first stage is like a capture the flag event, and then they do like a try hack meet, and then you have to do like the normal like SANS questionnaire that they put you through to get into any of their like free training scholarship classes. So I'm doing that, and I'm technically no longer a student, but I'm a member of WESIS, so I have access to that training. You know what I'm saying? Training stage.
10 G's.
Yeah, at minimum. And those certifications hold weight. They're very well respected.
Yeah, I have some instances where the company didn't want to talk to me if I didn't have a certain SANS cert. Mm-hmm. And they was paying money. They was paying that job, if somebody was to work that job probably for a year, I think that job would pay them like $300K just for that certification they wanted. Like, so there is money to be made. Now, here's my last question. Are you a movie person?
No.
What are you? Like, what's your stick? I'm going to find an angle.
I'm so boring.
Outside of studying, what you do when you come off of air?
Sometimes I go to sleep.
Okay. Memory foam.
Play with my daughter.
Memory foam pillow.
A memory foam pillow. Do I have one?
Yeah.
No.
All right. I was going to ask you something funny. Like, for me, I sleep, well, most of us in the house now, we sleep with like rain sounds, or white noise, brown
okay,
noise.
Yeah, white noise is a thing.
Man, you ever, since you're a parent, I bet you didn't deal with this before. You never tried to put your daughter to sleep for day nap and then you end up going to sleep with her?
All the time. So my daughter, unfortunately, I've conditioned her to co-sleep with me. So now I redid our entire guest room, and I made that her room. The walls are pink. She has a nice house bed. I was like, oh yeah, she's really going to want to sleep in here by herself. No, she doesn't care. So I go in there to put her to sleep at night so I can go study afterwards. And I fall asleep with her.
Yeah, you just fall asleep with her, and then you get up out of there and just leave her in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I never end up getting up.
So you got to get up. You got to get up, and then eventually she'll be like, okay, this is my room. Mm-hmm. And if she wake up at night, she'll probably cry a little bit, look around. She'll go back to sleep. Mm-hmm. Ain't nothing wrong with her. She ain't wet. She fed. She'll go back to sleep. Mm-hmm. It took us a minute for my baby girl, but like, man, she's going to stop fooling us. Get in this bed. Go sleep, girl. But guys, I hope you really enjoyed this episode. And Patreon people, of course, they're going to watch it first. So support the Patreon. Devaney, where can they follow you at?
My Instagram is now at DevTalksTech. I ain't really talked about a lot of tech on there yet, but I'm about to start. Y'all hold me accountable.
DevTalksTech, are they allowed to find you on LinkedIn?
You can find me on LinkedIn at Devaney Nelson.
All right, and I will have those in the description. We use that so the listeners can know how to find her. But like I always say, until next time, we out. Peace.